and welcome to Life in the Rabbit Hole, the Kaneo Parent Pod. I'm Lori Carice, a fellow parent living in the Kaneo Valley, and your host. Thank you for tuning in. For parent pod tales, community matters, and social topics, which include plenty of wellness content. Parenting is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's as difficult as much as it's rewarding, and we've all heard from the beginning of this journey, it takes a village. So join us as we connect through Life in the Rabbit Hole. For everyone, everywhere. Welcome to another episode of Life in the Rabbit Hole. Today, I have a returning guest, Jody Livingston. April is National Donate Life Month, and since Jody is a liver transplant recipient, I wanted to invite her back to share more about her experience. Welcome, Jody.
Thanks, Lori. I'm so happy to be back with you.
I am too. You know, when we actually closed our session last time, I realized, you know, we were just praising women. It was National Women's Month, right?
Yes.
And I just wanted to pull together, you know, dynamic women. And you kind of skimmed through different parts of your life. You know, you shared with us that you're an artist and a court-appointed special advocate, also known as CASA. And you touched some on being a liver transplant recipient. And after we closed, we realized, you know, April coming up is an awareness month. I'm like, let's do a little deeper dive, if you don't mind sharing. I'd like to hear more about the experience, how it affected your family, how life goes on. So with this question, tell us about the day your liver changed your life.
Do you want me to start with the failure of my liver, or do you want to start with the new liver? Sure. So almost 5 years ago, a friend of mine noticed that my eyes were yellow. And 2 days later, because I was on the weekend, so on Monday, I ended up in the emergency room. I wasn't feeling ill at that time. Nothing was making me feel badly. But my doctor's office asked me to go there so that blood work could be done and whatnot. And that very first day, my liver was declared as in failure, which is the worst that your liver can be as far as situation. So it was very dramatic. I didn't know that I had anything wrong with my liver. Looking back, I guess there were some signs, but that day I was admitted to the hospital for quite a lengthy stay at that time. And the very first day we started talking transplant. However, transplant is not something that happens immediately. And so it was mentioned, but I couldn't grab my brain around that. No, there's no way I'm going to have an organ transplant. That is way too dramatic. And the liver is pretty remarkable. It can heal itself. And so, you know, no more wine. I had been taking Advil literally by the handful and, you know, some medications and the hospital and treatments and things to try to reset my liver and get it going again. Fast forward, and it didn't seem to work. So hospice then became a conversation, because the kidneys and the liver are very symbiotic. One does well, you do something to fix the liver and it wrecks the kidneys. Then you do something to bring the kidneys back and you're hurting the liver again. So it was a very delicate dance that was being played, and my kidneys shut down. So that was a conversation that changed to hospice, which, again, very dramatic. Never thought I would be in that position. By a bunch of circumstances, a visiting doctor happened to be, you know, talked to on my case, and he said, no, this 46-year-old woman, she's not going to die of liver failure. We're going to do something for her. And then my neighbor was part of the administration of the hospital. And, you know, he would have done this for any patient, but because it was me, he heard about it through, you know, the neighborhood. And so, you know, he kind of stepped in and said, well, you know, is there anything we can do? And that kind of fast forwarded me to be able to be talked to a transplant center, because I live in New Hampshire. New Hampshire doesn't have a transplant center. And originally, when the transplant center was talked to, because my kidneys were in failure, I wasn't really a candidate because I had gone too far, and they didn't think it would be successful to put me through a surgery. Well, I did end up down at that transplant center, had an evaluation. A specialist kind of stepped in down there and tweaked a medicine for me that was very, very specialized that insurance companies don't cover anymore. It's super expensive. So that is part of the reason why medicine would have looked at my case and said, well, there's nothing we can do for her. Well, my husband said, well, whatever it is, we're going to pay. And it turned out that our insurance company did pay for it. And so that medication pretty much saved me and kept me in a state of kind of hovering until I could receive a transplant. About 6 months from the day that my liver was declared as in failure to get on the transplant list, and then 6 more months to get a liver. And then got the call to have a liver. It's pretty amazing. It was a very dramatic day. That was what you imagine. It was get the call, rush to the hospital. I'm walking through the emergency room. They're basically taking my clothes off as I'm walking through. And within 10 minutes of me walking in the building, I was in the OR getting prepped for surgery. It was that fast. It was crazy. Had no time to even think of what was happening. I was bawling, crying, because I was so relieved that I was having this opportunity to be able to live, because I was very ill and it was scary. So I was bawling, and I had a little ceramic turtle in my hand and a little mini, do you know the Beanie Baby, a little mini Beanie Baby of a tiger. Those were symbols while I was ill. The tiger fights, and I was going to fight to survive. And the turtle symbolizes longevity, and I was going to live for a long time. They allowed me to bring them into the emergency room, and they took pictures of them, and then they put a Band-Aid on the Beanie Baby after. So the Beanie Baby and I both got a new liver. But it was very emotional, of course. So my surgery went well, and I changed my life because of it. I'm living an authentic life. I think I touched on this briefly in our previous conversation, that I became a working artist out of this. But really what I want to share with you today was that emotion of getting my liver, and how, because someone passed away and chose to be an organ donor, I'm still here. And someone's loved ones honored their loved one's wishes. It is so, it's such an amazing gift to give to someone, and such an amazing acknowledgement of your loved one's life, you know, their legacy is giving life. And you can always remember that and cherish that and keep that in your heart with your memories of your person who has passed. So there is a shortage of organ donors, which, you know, you and I have discussed that when you got your license, you registered at the DMV, which, you know, a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't. And so I did get some statistics for you. There's, you know, in New England where I live, 25% of the people who are waiting for a liver, so 1 in 4 people who are waiting for a liver in New England die waiting. They don't get one. Doesn't happen in time. That's pretty dramatic to me. I they didn't tell me that till after. My husband knew, but I didn't know that. I think I probably would have been pretty in despair if I knew that, but that's pretty grim. So I think that there's a critical shortage of minorities, people of color, different ethnic backgrounds who are waiting. And because it is tissue donation, you know, it's a tissue, there has to be a tissue match. And so if you're talking ethnicity or, you know, people of color, it has to be a match. And so because for whatever reason, they have a shortage of donors, then recipients are waiting, and they wait longer and at a higher rate of not getting an organ. So this month is about awareness of becoming a donor. And also donatelife.net is the website where any information that anybody could ever want about organ donation is available. And also people can register to become a donor at donatelife.net. Another thing that I would ask people who are, you know, on board with being an organ donor is to make your wishes known to your loved ones. Because although you register, you could have had a conversation at the dinner table the night before saying that you had changed your mind for some reason. Hopefully you would not do that, but your loved ones are asked, you know, is this what you wish? And so you need to make your wishes known to people who are in your life. What can happen with an organ donor is you can save up to 8 lives, save their life. That is heroic as far as I'm concerned. My donor is a hero and his family are heroes because I'm still here and I wouldn't be. And also tissue donation, which is like corneas and skin grafts and bones. People have bone grafts to help with disease. Up to 75 people can be healed. Those people are not necessarily in danger of passing away, but they can be healed. So it is a very dramatic thing that organ donation can do.
Do you happen to know anything about your donor? It sounds like you do a little bit.
A little. It was a man, 37-year-old man, but that's pretty much all I know. I will say that he was incarcerated at one point. I don't know anything more than that, but what that does is put him in a different level of monitoring me, because there could have been a situation with illicit drug use or something like that that wasn't able to be tracked because it was in prison or in a incarcerated situation. If I'm saying it correctly, I'm not sure, but so I am on a little shorter leash than maybe somebody that didn't have that. But I've also had some more in-depth tests that have been done since my transplant. So I myself feel pretty confident that there's nothing, you know, my liver's doing great. My numbers are fabulous. I'm almost 4 years out. It's great. So that's all I know. And I don't think you would know that anything more than maybe gender and age if there was no incarceration involved. Now, as far as reaching the donor's family, a lot of people ask about that. And what happens is it's anonymous, as one would expect. And just if you don't mind, remind me that I do want to mention living donors after. So it's anonymous. And you can write a letter to your donor's family, you know, after you know you're going to be stable, and you write a letter and you give it to your donation, your transplant center. They forward it on to an organization that oversees any communication that's held between recipient and donor family. And they reach out to the donor family, provide the letter to them. And as a recipient, I have a choice to either, you know, open myself up to them contacting me, or just I've reached out and let them know how appreciative I am. You know, my life has gone on. I think of your loved one and your family at all times, you know, expressing my gratitude and, you know, how I am honoring that gift. I definitely opened myself up and said I would be happy to be communicated with, but I have not at this time heard back from them. My surgeon advised me that, surprisingly, I would want to reach out to the person if I was in the donor shoes, but she told me that it's not actually very common, so don't be disappointed, because she knew I would be disappointed. She knows me very well. So
I think as a family member, I would want to know that the choice or the decision to go ahead and allow your loved one to proceed with their wishes of being a donor did save lives. And I don't know that I would need the affirmation from those people. That might feel a little bit weird. I'm not sure. It's going to depend on that person. I would just love to know that. I think it's possibly part of the healing process of the loss of a loved one that you actually help somebody else.
Yeah, for sure.
So that part I would want to know about.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as circling back 3 or 4 years later and receiving letters, because I'm not in that situation. I'm not sure how I'd feel about that. But I think during the mourning process of losing a loved one and knowing choices that your loved one made and decisions you made together and in honoring those wishes actually helped somebody, I think that is amazing recovery and the process of healing and some closure.
For sure. I agree. So I felt obligated to write that at least one letter so that they would have heard from someone and be able to know that, this is what I'm doing with myself and what you've given me. So,
and you never know, they may have read it.
Yeah.
Or it might be sitting in a box for a child or a grandchild. Like, this is something about your father, if you choose to open it when you're 18 or something like that.
Very true. Very true. So I felt like it was not an obligation, but I felt compelled to write the letter. Like, I at least owed them, again, obligation. I don't mean it as an obligation or a job. I felt, compelled to do it, that I wanted to honor them.
You wanted to touch a little bit on living donors.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for remembering. So living donors are those that can donate a kidney and even the liver. Surprisingly, the liver is really remarkable. So people can donate a portion of their liver. So I urge people who have some sort of, liver is not the same, but kidneys, there are altruistic, which means donors who have no connection, like they're not related or it's not their neighbor or their friend. But there are so many people waiting for kidneys in the United States and the world, actually. And they spend years waiting for a kidney. It is very tragic because we really only need one kidney. It is the truth. We only need one kidney. And so donatelife.net would provide context of where people could register if that was something they were compelled to do. Here in the United States, you might see, somebody has a banner on their car saying, my loved one is waiting for a kidney. So-and-so needs to be saved by a kidney. They might see an ad somewhere. People do try to raise awareness of specific people that they're looking and they're ill. So, it's a big ask for people, but it doesn't cost anything other than your kidney and a little bit of healing. So it's just something that I feel strongly about. And if I could, I would, but they won't allow me to because of I'm not considered a suitable candidate because you live immunosuppressed when you've had a transplant. So
you mentioned healing. Is mm-hmm. your family healed from this experience?
I would say yes. I would say that. So, you can imagine it was pretty hard on my family. My son was in high school at the time. Our daughter was in college. And it was hard to see their mom ill and my husband, his wife. He was a great caregiver, but it was a lot. And it was a lot of emotion. And I would say that for him, I think it was pretty immediate. Like, as soon as I had the transplant, it was such a weight off for him that it had occurred and what we were waiting for happened. For me, it was harder. Healing from a transplant is pretty dramatic. It took me a while. And for the kids, again, I think for them, the symbolism of the actual surgery was great, and it was pretty much over. My son, not as much. He's a little more conservative, and he lived with us at the time because he was home. And so he saw how fragile I still was. And he's typical protective kind of person, male, and would worry about if I was doing too much or things like that. But yeah, I think they're healed. I think they have been amazing cheerleaders of me because I've changed my life, you know, and become this working artist. And they've all cheered me on along the way. You know, it's one of those, okay, this is what she's doing, and we are all in her corner. And so I joke, after I had gotten my transplant, probably a year after? Anyways, I dyed my hair pink at one point, and it looked really cool. And I said, you know, that's the privilege of transplant and almost dying. You get to do whatever you want. So it was kind of a joke amongst us for a little while that I got to do whatever I wanted for a while. And I think I've pretty much used that card up. So it's pretty much back to normal as far as.
No way. You keep going. You don't use that card up. I mean, this is a very unique situation. You take it to the end. I want to see pink hair whenever I meet you. Or at least a strip, okay?
Yes.
So you kind of mentioned earlier about, you know, we're talking about awareness also. I just kind of want to close that. Until now, my only relationship with organ donations was me registering at the DMV to be a donor. And I did that when I was 16, when I got my first license. So my relationship began as a teenager with that little pink sticker on the front of my license. And that's old school. That dates me. Now now it's somewhere else. I'm not even sure what my driver's license looks like anymore. They've got the whole front and back and it's all scannable. It's still on there. I've never removed it. It's not a pink sticker anymore, of course. But until now, that's been my only relationship. And now, knowing you, I am even more grateful for the process because you are a very special lady. Mm-hmm. I am so glad you've come into my life. I consider you a friend, and that's why I asked you to come back and share your story. And, you know, I heard a little bit more about the process today. And don't cry. I had goosebumps when you were telling your story. I care very deeply for you, and I consider you my friend. So my relationship with organ donation has just up-leveled tremendously. And I'm an advocate. I want to share your story as much as possible, wherever you allow. And I support you and the community that you're a part of. And with that, I just want to say I love you.
I love you too. I'm so happy.
I mean that. It's like we haven't even known each other. It's like we have this connection. We haven't known each other that long.
It's genuine.
We do have a connection. We're both crying here. We'll go ahead and close on a positive note. Why don't you drop that website one more time for awareness?
Sure. It's donatelife.net.
All right, everybody. Please go out there, continue with awareness, and consider being a donor.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you so much for listening today. And please subscribe to our podcast so that you can be alerted each time we drop a new episode. For bonus content, be sure to join us as a member and receive Green Room Diaries, After the Final Cut, Confessions of a Canoe Valley Mom, as well as our exclusive wellness workshops. From one parent to another, we've got this. Just believe in yourself and remember, we're our own worst critics. Tell yourself and another that they're doing a good job.